Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Are you trying to find the perfect distribution platform to get your music on Spotify and Apple? I personally use and love DistroKid. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/DistroKid to get a small discount and get access to a platform with unlimited uploads for a yearly fee. Happy uploading and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today is the host of the exclusive episodes of the Mixing Music Podcast. We have here James Dean Mixes. Jimmy Dean. James
Dean.
Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean Paris. Jammy James.
If you want to play Warzone with me, Jimmy Dean Paris. That's me online.
Are you good?
I think I am. Like, I win. I like get wins very frequently.
Cool.
And I thought that was normal, but like other friends that like I play with and stuff, they don't.
Okay.
So either I'm being put in very easy lobbies, or I think I'm good.
Yeah, I'm trash at that game. So, but when I was in high school playing Modern, I wonder if it's an age thing, because when I was playing Modern Warfare 2,
yeah,
I was really good on Xbox 360.
Really.
But you play Modern Warfare, put me in a Modern Warfare room now, I am trash. And I wonder if I've gotten worse, or if people have gotten better, or if it's just I'm old and I'm not getting used to the new controls.
Yeah.
I am playing on mouse and keyboard now rather than Xbox 360.
Oh, but I heard that's an advantage too. Although I will say it is very different playing like a Warzone thing. Like I was, not to talk too much about Warzone, but I was playing with someone just 2 nights ago, and he's really, really good. Like he almost was going to be like a professional Call of Duty player. So he's really good at that, but like Warzone, there's still different aspects to it that are not just like normal COD. And so like he was failing in that. But when killing people, he was good at that.
Yeah, like gunfights, sure, but
yeah.
Interesting.
Anyways, right. Yeah, I'm James Dean Mixes.
Yeah, sweet.
Well, that's my real name.
Welcome, James. Welcome to the show again. As a reminder, I'm going to do this pitch we do every time. The Mixing Music Podcast, we have exclusive episodes, and there's 2 episodes every single week. The free content has one with an exclusive archive. Those exclusive archives are from like 2 years ago. So if you, right now, if you unlock all of the exclusive episodes, which by the way, the exclusive episodes don't have any ads.
Yeah, they're
ad-free. You unlock all of them all at once, and you can binge them. Mm-hmm. And there's like over 200.
Yeah.
So it like almost doubles the count of podcast episodes.
Yeah.
So go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. And they're fantastic. The exclusive episodes are really good. They're shorter. They're precise. They're a lot more technical. We focus on talking about technical things because that's what everybody wants, is technical information. Well, guess what? We give it to you in the exclusive episodes.
Oh, yeah. And we've been doing mix breakdowns. So we've been doing some mixes that DK has done. We've been doing some of my mixes. And we're getting very technical and very specific on
what
went into it. Yeah. Like some of them, like a few times DK like has broken down the chain that he did on a vocal for this song or on a vocal for another song or the overall mix bus. So yeah, and we've been getting some really good feedback on that. So
yeah, and then we, and because it's behind a paywall, I can share and talk about projects that I typically couldn't due to the nature of the bigness of the records. The nature of the records.
Yeah. And you get to hear DK, yes, he has true colors. Because he's a little more unhinged behind the paywall.
Oh.
I'd say so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not in real life, you're true
colors. Or me and James are friends, you know, that's how that works.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's episode is really interesting. We're gonna continue to relate it back to the music industry because I feel like we could go on big tangents on this. But I'm going to talk about this. You brought this up to me, and, mm-hmm. and I said, let's do an episode about that. But we were on our way to, was it the mastering engineer's studio that we were on our way to? We were talking.
That's when it started.
I think that's when it started.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, basically, it came down to James having an epiphany moment. And he realized, I didn't realize to do well in the music industry, the bar was set so low.
Yes, I didn't word it like that.
You were talking about how like, and you gave a specific example, there's this producer circle that you go to where everybody comes together to make a beat,
yeah.
you know, and it's like, and it's funny because out of the five or six people in this group chat, more than half of them at the very last minute are like, hey, sorry, I can't pull, something came up, I can't show up.
Yes,
and like,
yeah.
nobody's able to stay on a schedule.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, to give more context, it's just, I was just kind of frustrated because there's been a few, it's happened more than I thought it would have. We would plan, be like, all right, we're gonna meet up this day, this time. Like, we would have everything set. And it's happened so many times of, like, the day of, or like very last minute, be like, hey, actually, I can't do this. I forgot I had something tonight. And just like, I don't know, I was just frustrated.
And you also mentioned that the one other person who always was really reliable, he stood out to you, Mitchell Bashford.
Yes.
He always stands out because he is the most solid person.
Yes. Yeah. Mitchell. Yeah. Mitch. Shout out to Mitch Beats.
He stands
always sticking
normal.
With it. Yeah.
He stands out for being normal, which is hilarious.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's a thing of like, cause like, you know, when we say I keep a calendar and stuff. And so it's just like, I blocked it out. So I make sure, and I make sure to let my wife know, hey, this night I have a session. So just don't plan anything that night. And just, I make sure that everything is lined up so that I could just go. You know, and I don't have to cancel and stuff. And I don't know. It was just,
you use a calendar. You're a normal human being.
I talked to you because I was just very frustrated.
Yeah, and
about getting stuff done.
This is interesting because I mean that frustration is pretty apparent. I mean, across the board. Couple things that I want to preface before we get into this episode is, one, we're gonna overgeneralize a lot on this episode. So keep that in mind. And if you get upset, that's fine. That's on you. It is your choice to get upset. And just like us getting upset and ranting about it, mm-hmm. is also, you know, a personality flaw of ours. We shouldn't let it affect us, but it does. And the reason why we're being open about it is because we hope, and this is the third thing, we hope that the things that we talk about, you can turn into lessons and decisions that you make in the future to empower you to do better in your own career, in the pursuit of your career, increasing the amount of your income from music. So
yeah, the nice thing is it's all learnable. Like,
these are all lessons. Take these as lessons.
It's like learning how to handle money properly. Like, for most people, you're not naturally good at it, but over time you learn how to get better at it.
Yeah. Even the concept of there is no upper class Illuminati keeping poor people poor. It's it's more close, the closer to the truth. And there may be a little bit, obviously there's a few people that are parasitic in nature. that's across the board. That is not defined by social class or income. There's parasites across the board, but in general, what's closer to the truth is probably little tiny habits and decisions that we make that we don't realize that we're making that keep us from getting there. For example, like, we talk about this all the time, the bar is set so low,
yeah.
that And this is my tweet that we're going to start with, is I tweeted about this and The tweet is, to do well in the music industry, all you have to do is, one, reply to emails in a timely manner. And this includes text too.
Mm-hmm.
Two, actually keep the appointments that you make.
That's a big one.
Three, finish projects quickly and without errors.
Yeah.
So that means you need to, when you are asked by the A&R or the manager or the artist to send stems, or by the engineer, whoever's asking to send stems, you don't fuck up sending the stems.
Yeah.
You turn off normalization. You send them correctly. They're all named correctly. They're all organized. Like, there are no mistakes.
Yeah.
And that takes a little bit of practice, a little bit of experience, and even a few tests, like test bouncing to see what it's like. Export your own stems and then import them into another DAW or into another DAW or into your own DAW, but in a new session, just to make sure that it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that you learn over time.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you right now, like, in at least in my level of playing field, which however high that is, it's very rare that producers send bad stems. Mm-hmm. Like, their mistakes. Like, we're not even talking about, like, bad sounding. We're talking about, like, naming is off. The stems are not bounced to the correct time. So it's like,
that's,
they're all moved to the front of the session.
That,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, all the sounds are moved to the front of the session. Or, things are mislabeled, moved around. These small things that are totally within our control,
mm-hmm.
these are the small things that keep people, that, like, people will sift themselves out from future success.
Yeah.
Just because of these small things. It's not some big, you didn't meet the right person. It's, even if you met the right person, if you can't fucking text back immediately, or you accidentally ghost someone because you're the type of person that has 350 unread messages at any given time.
Yeah.
You, even if you get the opportunities, those opportunities don't stick.
Yeah. And I think from what I'm experiencing on my own and what I am experiencing through, you know, like doing some assisting for you and, you know, talking to you about your progress that you're making right now, it seems like a lot of the big, because there are things in your control that you can do, but there are a lot of things out of your control, like the timing of when you meet the right people. But like,
that's out of control. Yeah.
But those out of control things, those things that are out of your control. I'm trying to think how to word this. And I was talking to my mother-in-law about this, actually. A lot of, in this business with, you know, blowing up as a mixer, or becoming a huge or like very credible mixer with big credits and like Grammys and stuff, a lot of those big blow-ups do happen as you've happened to work on the right project at the right time, and that blows up. But to get into that is different. So like, this is on the member exclusive podcast because we're going to talk about it super openly, but you were talking about an artist and how... it was a very chaotic scenario, but it was with a label that you were mixing for them. But you made sure that you were very professional because of that. And even though it was just chaos everywhere, everything was happening, because they remembered how professional you were with that one song and that project, they wanted to work with you further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So like just like a matter of being very professional and being very reliable, even though in that very moment, it might not seem like it is getting you a lot of traction. That is what stays in people's minds, like when you have a manager or a producer in A&R and everything, shit's hitting the fan, everything's going crazy. They could remember you as someone who is reliable that they know won't fuck it up.
That's true. And I'm going to say this. We talk a lot about like philosophy and business skills in general on the podcast. People want to hear, how do you use a compressor? How do you use a distressor? When is the right time to use a distressor? Like, how do you EQ vocals to make it sound sharp? I'm going to tell you right now, those things, if when it comes to making a career, I'm not going to lower the bar as far as like those skills go, because those skills are important. But there are YouTube channels, there are podcasts, there are TikTokers that make content about how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks about how, even if you know how to do that, or even if you don't know how to do that, the most important thing that people want, that they keep coming back for, is professionalism. That's all it is. And the bar is so fucking low. Like, it is unbelievably low how the bar is. I mean, people that are like in the music industry, like, especially, I don't mean to say this like this, James. So like, mm-hmm. right now you're in the, you're much younger than I.
Oh yeah. I'm a lot newer in the game.
You're earlier in your career than I am. And at my level, there are very few peers that are unprofessional.
Yeah.
There's very few because they get sifted out. They get left in the dust.
Yeah.
Right? At your level right now, there's like, the sifting is currently happening.
Yeah.
You know exactly. What I'm saying? Like the wheat from the tares. You know, and those people that get sifted out usually happen by their own choices.
Yeah.
The fact that Mitch stands out because he's the only one that is able to keep a calendar is hilarious to me and completely relatable.
Yeah.
Every single engineer's horror story, like if I everybody from like Connecticut to Kansas, right? From New York to New Zealand, all right? everybody's complaints about engineers is rarely ever their ability to mix. It's about how they complain when asked to do revisions. It's about how they didn't give them updates, so they were totally in the dark about what's going on with their session.
Yeah.
It's about how they took way too long, and I was willing to pay more, but like they refused to take my money, and in exchange, they took way too long.
Yeah.
And it's like, insecure. It's almost never about, you talk to any artist, it's never about the mix.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember in the mix, you guys were giving training about being professional, or about, I don't remember what it was about, but someone was talking about how she hired a mixer and like what her experience was with it, and it was bad, and not once did she bring up how like good the mix was.
And that's interesting because I didn't ask her to talk about,
yeah,
like I didn't tell her beforehand, hey, like don't talk about the mix. All three points that she said, I was like, have you ever had an experience with a bad mixer?
Yeah.
And she said three things, and I didn't ask her to do this. All three things had nothing to do with his mixing.
Yeah. It was like lack of communication. It was something like he didn't know how to timestamp because he didn't know what the, like, find the tempo or
yeah,
just
he
like
refused to
things.
Do something, and he complained about it, and he ghosted me, and he refused to do the revisions or something like that. And it's okay, so talk about the studio too. Like, at the studio, when we had an internship program, at any given time, we always consistently had about like 5 to 20 interns, fluctuating in between those two numbers. But, you were an intern at our studio for a very short while, but. Tell us about your experience there.
My experience, I'm going to try to say this without like sounding super cocky and stuff, but like
I'm giving you permission to
permission
for the purpose
to.
Of the lesson.
Okay. I came out, I think 8 months ago is when my wife and I, Ashley, like we moved out here and, for me to intern at the studio. And if I remember correctly, I think it was within either a month or a month and a half, you and Lou, already like promoted me to like runner. And
just ridiculously fast.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
It's just like, it's super fast and stuff. And like, how do I put this?
And asked you to be the host on the exclusive episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys like, yeah, luckily
I threw you,
DK threw me a lot of tests. He was playing me like a puppet just to, just so you guys understand how asymmetrical our relationship is. He was just, no, I'm kidding. He was very healthy with his test, so that's good. It was just like a series of I just made sure and every big mixer you listen to talk about their time as an intern, they did same things. It was just like going above and beyond, just doing the simple checklist that they ask you to do during your shift. And B, going like beyond that. And I vividly remember my first shift, and there were some other interns at the studio as well. One of the things on the list is to scrub the toilet. And so I was scrubbing the toilet, like all around. Like I was scrubbing the top, I was scrubbing like behind and stuff, just getting everything out. Cause that's, in my mind, that's scrubbing the toilet. And I remember one of them walked by and he looked at me, he was like, whoa, you're going above and beyond, like doing this. And I was like, oh, I guess it's scrubbing the toilet. And even when like Lou came into the studio later that day, they were like all saying like, dude, James is like really going above and beyond with his cleaning. And in my mind, I was like, I was just scrubbing the toilet. That's something that's on the list.
That's on the list.
Yeah.
It is a requirement. We have a PDF that everybody gets a hold of, as well as it's posted on the fucking front door, scrub the toilet. And we can tell when you did a shift because that was the only time the toilet was clean.
Yeah. And like, I always reorganize the wire, which again was something that we like talked about and stuff. If you ask Lou probably what his most his biggest frustration with the studio was, like, he would probably say the wires, because like even like within a day the wire, like all our
like
cord
the cable
boxes,
wrapping
our
and
cable
stuff,
yeah. boxes and stuff were like all disorganized every time, and so like that's something I like made sure to do and stuff. And it's crazy how just by doing even the check requirements, like I still did, it's always good to do above and beyond and do more than just what's that if you're wanting to stand out as an intern. But even just by doing that, like it stood out quite a bit that I was just making sure when asked to clean the toilet, I full on clean the toilet. I didn't just do a toilet brush in the middle and stuff like that. I cleaned the bathroom. And yeah, I don't know. It's the only way I know how to put it is it was kind of easy to stand out as an intern and does that make sense?
Yeah. The conclusion is the bar, you didn't realize how low the bar was.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that to like, talk shit or something on like other interns or how they handle the things and stuff. It was just, I guess for me, and maybe it's different at different studios that are like very, very, they're super competitive in natures and stuff.
I definitely think that had to do with it. Like the culture that we had, we were a relaxed studio.
Yeah.
That had to do with it. It was
and there is a trade-off too, because like, you know, because of that, I do think it was always a very good vibe in the mix. Like the interns did, like whenever they interacted with artists that came in and stuff, they did seem like humans and not just interns, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's a trade-off, and I get that. I understand that. But yeah, it was just like a thing of like how like standing out and just making sure if I, for whatever reason, something crazy came up and I couldn't do a shift, I would go out of my way to find someone to cover it. And to make sure to let them know as soon as possible and things like that. And
basics.
Yeah. And just, and communication, just like very clearly communicating and very, very like it's.
And we promoted you in so many ways because of it.
Yeah. Like it was very quick promotion. And like the people that, and other interns that you and Lou still talk about to this day, it was like similar thing. They did their job and they made sure to communicate and they were just reliable. And because of that, It's like a thing, like if you're interning somewhere, they want to trust you to do more things. They at a busy studio, they want as many people as possible who they can rely on, but they need to first know that they can actually rely on you. Because if a big artist comes in, they need to know that someone's going to be there that they know they can rely on, not yeah. someone that will make their studio, their name and their image look unprofessional.
Yeah, this is human nature. This happened recently. A friend of mine, a guy, cheated on his girlfriend. He broke up with her. He cheated.
Oh, shit.
He cheated. It was. I asked him what happened, and I didn't know he cheated until afterwards. I asked him what happened before I fully knew what was going on. And he's like, yeah, she was just a bitch. It was her fault. And I'm like, oh, dang, that sucks. He kind of gave me this roller coaster story. It's like, yeah, it's been going down. And I'm like, yeah, but he fucking cheated.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's never, and this is the problem, is that people don't realize, like all the people complaining, I never got my shot. I never had a chance. It's because they probably didn't deserve it. They were the ones that were in the wrong. They're just not willing to admit it.
Yeah.
And if you hear any sort of come up story, for example, like Dave Pensado and Jason Joshua has so many, I was the best intern story. You know,
yeah.
All of these big engineers have, I was the best intern story. Like they were proud of their attention to detail and their ability to beat everyone out as an intern in their respective studios.
Yeah.
Like, and these are common stories. You can find these on podcasts, on YouTube clips, on TikTok clips. Like even Tizio has a great come up story where it's like, he was the punching bag. He was given a shot. He proved himself. Like, every single big engineer that's winning right now has
yeah.
proven themselves and stood out by being the most reliable person there.
Yeah.
And anybody else who doesn't get that opportunity, this is why the idea that like people are mean, but if you don't learn these lessons, life is more cruel because life doesn't tell you why you're fucking up.
Yeah.
You never realize it. It's best to have an asshole friend that tells you why you're fucking up, because if you don't have a parent or an asshole friend that tells you why, like life will never tell you why. And you will live your entire life wondering, why the heck am I not getting these opportunities? When to everyone else, it's obvious, but nobody else cares to even spend the energy to tell you why.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's life is a bitch.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I'm going on a rant here.
No, you're good. I think it's something to point out too. It's I'm trying to think. It's a conversation I have with Ashley a lot, my wife, and it's why like, for example, going to NAMM or just hanging out at the studio with a bunch of people, it's very, for me, socially taxing, social battery energy-wise taxing. And that's because, at least in my mind and my perspective, when I'm interacting with everyone, I do always treat it like, and I do always know in the back of my mind that almost every person that I'm interacting with, they could greatly affect the future of my career. That makes sense. And so, like, in a way, it is kind of taxing to think of things like that way, because then I'm just exhausted after, like I was done with NAMM.
No, I get it.
I was done with NAMM after one day.
You did one
I was
day.
Like, I was like, I honestly was like, when you guys said it was time to go, I was like, let's go. I'm done. Like, I was, and it was just like this thing, because I do kind of, in a way, like, in my mind, I do know that, like, every person I'm interacting with, they could have a big impact on, like, the rest of my career. And because of that, I do make sure I'm, like, professional, and that I am reliable. Like, when I talk to someone, or even if it's like someone like a friend, he asked, you know, hey, like, I'm wanting to charge for, what do your friends usually charge for producing? I want to start producing and putting together a package. And he's just like starting out in this too. I made sure though with him, like within 24 hours, I like reached out to my other producer friends and asked, I think are at the same level. And I asked, hey, what do you charge? And I was able to get back to him quick. And that's a good relationship. And like soon after he recommended me for a mix for his manager who was looking for a mix. It's just stuff like that. And
that manager ended up giving you a lot more mixes. Is that the story?
It just happened. But yeah, now yeah. His manager is aware of me. They know my price and they know that I get back to them quick. And that I guarantee will pay off down the line. And I don't mean that to say like, oh, treat every interaction like a transaction. Because, you know, we're still people, we're interacting with people, it's fun to hang out with other engineers. But there is something that to be said about if you're reliable, and if people see that, that's what comes to mind when you're in a stressful situation and for whatever, like you know, you can't take on another mix, so you need to pass them off to a friend or just something like that. Like, that's what comes into mind, is this guy was reliable and they were cool.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's usually how people get put on too. I mean, think about this. Like, if Beyonce was working on a record that wasn't stressful and there was a lot of time, right?
Yeah.
Why would they hire anybody else other than her normal team? The one time that you're going to get put on is the one time that it becomes stressful because one person's not able to do it or something happened, there's some beef, and all of a sudden deadlines are like the next day and you are thrown in there because you are known to be the reliable person that can do this, and you are taking on the risk of someone else's recommendation. Someone else is risking their reputation for you, and that is how you get in. Almost always. It's never going to be like, okay, we have time, we just want to try someone else. No, like, you're going to be thrown into a Beyonce session or some sort of top 40 session because you are their last hope. And if you do any sort of drama, if you're not reliable, you're making the person who recommended you look bad, their reputation goes down, so they're risking that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like, they know that you failed. So it's like, failure is not an option. That's how it's going to happen. And I don't think most people will ever, one, be recommended to be put in that situation. Like, there's very few people I'm being dead serious. Out of the hundreds of people that have interned for me, there's probably three names that, like, to this day, at any given time, I'd, like, recommend to be put in a situation like that, because I'm not willing to risk my reputation over just some normie. And I don't think most people, that have worked with me didn't show me their resilience enough where I knew confidently that they wouldn't fold under that pressure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's like, it's interesting that it's like kind of nepotism, knowing who you know, but you don't get big opportunities in a calm environment. Yeah. They come every single, that's another common story, like along with Jason, Joshua, and Tizio's stories where it's like, we were the best interns ever. Jason Joshua talks about like how he like chops the pillow and like every label is faced forward, things like that. Yeah. It's not just that. It's that every big opportunity that levels up a career comes with a lot of stress.
Yeah.
Like, because you are the backup. And the fact that they need a backup means that this session isn't going well. And this this song isn't going well. So they just need someone to fucking do it without complaining.
Yeah.
And that's how it comes. And that's when you get your chance. And that's how you blow up over time. And slowly you're... we did an episode where I talked about, like, this is a month and a half ago, about Dale Becker's advice. Because we often talk about, like, mental health, like, making sure you have boundaries, not doing anything that you don't want to do. Like, if you want to stick to a 9-to-5, if you want to have kids, if you want to take vacations, things like that, right? And we talked about how Bob Horn talked about how he should have had boundaries way earlier on. And it, like, affected his health. He said, I believe that part of my stroke was partially my inability to have structure, and I was kind of like the bend over bitch. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of
working crazy hours.
And he said that may not have been worth it throughout the entirety of career. He wished he, like, had more self-care. On the opposite end, Dale Becker's advice was, people tend to put up their boundaries way too early. Like, yes, you should work to a point where you don't put up your boundaries, but at the same time, like, he basically mentioned that, like, if you want to level up, those first opportunities usually come really fast, really fiery, and you just need to prove yourself. And then slowly down the road, when you are recognized and you become the go-to person, can you start setting up boundaries? People put up boundaries way too early. So this is something that I like to think about. I want to go into the next section of the pod here, which is so the bar is low. We want to be clear. And the reason why we bring this up and we continuously talk about this is because the bar being low is very empowering. We are always all about empowering and resilience. That's all it is, because those are within your, that is a choice you can make.
Yeah.
It's not, nothing that we talk about is like, you're born with it. It's old money. You know, it's no. Like, you can make small daily decisions to create, the type of self-discipline to be someone that is reliable, to be someone that is often called on. Okay. Yeah. This is empowering.
Can I say some things too that come to mind with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I love thinking about A, what's in your control, and B, what is out of your control. Right. So, like, for example, when we're talking about those, you know, big career changing opportunities that come up, when that happens is out of your control for the most.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But what leads up to that is in your control. Well, you practicing and making sure you know the equipment in the studio is in your control. Reading manuals for all the hardware in the studio is in your control. What is out of your control is when you're running for a shift and the console, something's weird, they can't figure it out, and you could come in and change it quick and fix it quick, and they remember, okay, this guy is fixing things quick. We will not lose session time if we, for some reason, need him for a session. That stuff is in your control. What is in your control also is... how good does your Instagram page look? How having a website so that when you meet someone at a networking event and you exchange Instagram, if they check out your Instagram page,
which is just kind of weird. Like, in LA, Instagram is the main.
Yeah, it's like what's your Insta? Like, that's just very, very normal.
That is the professional. It's not LinkedIn.
Yeah. So what is in your control is what they see when they check out your Instagram page after they meet you.
Yeah, and it's not about, like, are you posting often? It's more about, do you look professional?
Yeah.
Do you have a good headshot? Like, the small things, because if you have, like, a lazy meme-y thing, it doesn't look professional, you know?
Yeah. Like, even I don't, like, post, like, an insane amount, but, like, I do make sure it looks good and that people, when they look at my page, I literally got a gig engineering for a producer because he was going to interview me, but then he looked at my page and he said, okay, I at least could tell you know your stuff. And that was kind of all he needed.
Boom. Amazing. That's awesome.
And again, it wasn't in my control when or who, like, when that guy was looking at my page, but what was in my control is that it looked good for him.
Yeah. The bar is low. If you aren't successful, it's probably your fault. And this is the most empowering thing that I've ever heard, is power always follows the blame finger. I'm going to say that again. And I repeat this often during many different episodes. Power always follows the blame finger. So if you point that blame finger inwards, most people don't. 90% of people don't. They think the world is hating against me. It is some sort of systemic thing going on. And that may be partially true, but it doesn't matter. You blame it inwards and you try to improve yourself personally, you will be given opportunities. And in fact, I don't want to say too much about this, but if there is obvious systemic stuff going on and you still choose to point the blame finger inwards, more people want to see you win. And they root, people root for you, which is the best thing that can ever happen, which is part two of this podcast here, is becoming the person people want to see win. Who is the type of person that you want to see you win, right? Like, or sorry, let me say that again. We all know people in the industry, among friends, and it doesn't even matter, outside of our career, outside of the music industry. We were talking about this like with comedy. I'm a big fan of comedy. And Shane Gillis hosting SNL, huge comeback. Mm-hmm. You know, like I love his humor, his comedy.
He's just lovable.
Yeah, my youngest son is Down syndrome. I love his Down syndrome jokes. And it's just such, like, for some reason, he has positioned himself in the comedy world as someone that every comedian, like everybody that is in the industry, wants to see him win.
Yeah.
But in other words, like, there was a podcast that's unrelated, but he's like, he was trying to explain this. The host was trying to explain this. Like, nobody cares if Bert Kreischer or Andrew Schultz wins. Like, nobody cares.
Yeah.
But everybody was rooting for Shane Gillis. And it made me think about, and I'm thinking out loud, I'm formulating these thoughts here. Like, how did Shane become the person in the industry that, regardless of whether or not you like him, mm-hmm. he is someone that everybody roots for without jealousy, without, reservation? How did he become this? Everybody loves him and wants to see him win. Like, because mm-hmm. usually there's always people that are winning, but like nobody cares if they're winning, or there's like insecurity, or like there's jealousy, and people like actually yeah. don't want to see you win. But like, there are rare few among any industry where they're just loved by everybody.
Yeah.
And we're trying to break these things down. And I think, first off, this is important because nepotism is real and gatekeeping is kind of real. It's mostly practical. It's not to keep you out, but it's only to let people in that deserve it. That's yeah. what it is. Only so many people can, and it's only to find people that deserve it. Okay, so it is important. If people want to see you win, they will share your name. For example, I want to see James win, and they're very slow. It's not like I have this huge... like, James, I have a 9-to-5 job for you, that salary, that's 200K a year. And it's not that. It's small little yeah. things.
Like you trusting me when you recommended me for the Sync Music company to mix for them.
Yeah.
And like things like that, yeah.
You know, and it's seeing how he cleaned the toilet, you know? You know, it's like, it's these small things that kind of lead to the burgeoning of a career, right? So, you want to convince people, and getting people to want to see you win, I think, it's not because he has a baby face. Look at this hairy man's face. What is that? Why is that a comment? Someone commented on Twitter. That's funny.
Just wanted to say, because he has a baby face.
This is the hairiest baby face I've ever seen.
That is crazy. I usually get the exact opposite. People think I'm dirty.
He's talking about because Shane Gillis has a baby face.
Oh, that makes more sense. Can you elaborate? What about my face is baby?
How do we get someone in the music industry to become someone that you always want to win? I think level one is the first half of this podcast, which is become someone really reliable, become someone that answers emails quick, that is working hard, and to layer on top about it, not bragging about it all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a difference. Like, right now we're talking about a podcast. I'm giving you tips to how to be better. This is one thing. And I'm sure that I come off as arrogant, but there's a difference between silent confidence and insecure arrogance. There's yeah. a huge difference. And I think that is one of the big differences between Andrew Schultz and Shane Gillis.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about comedy. I love comparing music to other art forms, including
yeah.
art, because it's, we have a little bit more objectivity with a different art form. But I think that's the big difference.
Yeah.
Is that Andrew Schultz often comes off as super arrogant and kind of a douchebag, where like, and like Shane Gillis is just like funny and authentic. And even when he does come off as a douchebag, it's more like he's just joking and yeah. he apologizes,
you know,
he's very aware of the yeah. situation. Like, he doesn't double down on things. You
yeah.
know?
And that's something. And I think this directly parallels with what we do too, is I love that we're using Shane Gillis as an example for all this. I think he handled when he did get kicked off SNL very professionally and well. He could have gone on like this whole crying, I'm canceled tour and like something like that. But he was like, no, well, like that sucks, but I'm just going to go make a bunch of funny sketches now. Like, that's it. Like, he's it's an interesting thing that, like, of all the comedians, and I guess is, I don't know, this may be a hot take, I don't know. Of all the comedians who complain all day about cancel culture and things like that, he's had an actual example of, I guess, what people would call being canceled, yet he complains about it the least.
That's true. And even his reaction to it is, someone gave him advice and said, just don't react to it. Don't talk about it. And he didn't. He didn't try to defend himself. He didn't double down on it. Yeah. He could have. And that's what every other comedian was recommending. Anyway, we won't get into that.
Anyway, but I think it parallels, though. Like, sorry, if I could finish.
Go ahead.
There is bullshit that we do face in the music industry that isn't fair. Right? To a degree, it's not fair that mixers, like, almost never get points. Like stuff like that.
Until you get to a certain level.
Yeah, until you get to a certain level. There are things that are definitely not fair in it, like, that do just kind of straight up suck in, like, how things are handled or in the industry and stuff. And it's okay to acknowledge that, or to, like, honestly, every now and again, it feels okay to complain about it. But it's about, like, still just, like, not letting that stop you from doing all you can to work with the system.
I want to generalize this to the idea of just in general, right? But there is a part of complaining and talking about how difficult it is. Like, my life is so hard. Like, for example, if I started ranting, and this is the part of it that nobody really acknowledges or talks about, and it's very subconscious level, and it's a very narcissistic thing. Mm-hmm. Not narcissistic personality disorder, but it's a tendency to, everybody's a little bit narcissistic, right? Mm-hmm. When I complain about, I'm an indigenous, English is my second language, these are real things. I'm an immigrant. I'm an indigenous immigrant. My culture is being lost in Japan from Okinawa. You know, I am brown and look Hispanic in America, right? These are all things that are very valid. English is my second language, and I struggle through school. I have severe ADHD, which is, like, funny because it's the podcast and it works really well.
I've
weaponized it for the podcast. It's my biggest strength. But these are all valid, real things. But when I complain about those things and talk about how I'm limited because of them, the unspoken thing that I'm acknowledging is that I believe my hardships are more valuable and more important than yours. That's the unspoken thing that people hear. So when I hear someone else complaining about, I have this and this is my thing and these are my weaknesses, there's a subconscious thing that people don't talk about, which is you're acknowledging that you are refusing to acknowledge that everybody has a hard time. That your hardships are more valid and more important than someone else's. And that is so wrong, so bad, and incredibly unhealthy. And that is, okay, so we're going back to ways that people want to see you win. Yeah.
But I will just butt in and say, sometimes it just feels good to complain. And that's okay. It's about how it affects your actions outside of it. But every now and again, it just feels good to, like, you know, complain to your wife about how hard some things are, things like that.
Let me think about this. I don't.
Complains. No. I guess it's like my thing of it. Everyone complains, and sometimes it feels good.
Yeah. No. I think everybody does complain, and because it does feel good, but that's really unhealthy.
Yeah. It's about how you let it affect your actions.
Yeah. And I think that more people need therapy, and real alphas, do therapy.
Yeah. We're talking to you, Vin Fees on the. Vin is on the chat. No, I'm kidding. We're not talking about you
at all. Where did that come from?
I don't know. I thought it'd be funny to call someone out. We're talking to you,
James.
Yeah.
We're talking about you.
Statistically, likely at least a few James out there listening.
That's I like that. Todd, we're talking to you, Todd. Listening to the podcast. But how do you become, and I want to talk a little bit about how do you become someone that everybody wants to see win, or how do you avoid becoming someone that nobody wants to see win? And I think the one thing that we're going to go off first is the negative thing, like how to things that you should avoid. I think people don't want to see people win if they're often complaining and if they're showing arrogance. So things like someone that's always name dropping all the time. It's a small, simple thing, but every time that you unnecessarily name drop, it's basically showing how insecure you are. Yeah. That's all it is.
And honestly, like, from my time in the mix, the people who I've met who have actually worked with the biggest artists did not bring it up at all. While I was talking to them, it was later on, like, we follow each other on Instagram. I looked at their Instagram. I was like, oh my goodness, this guy produces for Post Malone. He did not bring it up once.
Yeah. Yeah. It's silent confidence. Yeah. Anytime name dropping or like oversharing or talking about how good you are is a huge, obvious sign of insecurity.
Yeah.
Anybody that is constantly comparing as well,
mm-hmm.
Or like, It's all a sign of insecurity, and insecurity is a hard one to defeat. Yeah. Like, that is a very natural human thing that happens, and it usually comes from a place of deep insecurity and a desire to show yourself as superior because you don't believe you are. If this is the case, I would actually recommend a book called The Courage to Be Disliked. This talks about this directly, the psychology and the philosophy behind it and how to overcome it. Really great book.
Well, yeah, one of those books. My mother-in-law's reading that. She recommended
Yeah, one
it.
Of the ones that changed my life. But this is a normal human thing, especially with a subjective creative industry like ours. How you feel about yourself and having any sort of insecurity will deeply reflect the outcome of your career. And that's just the unfortunate thing. That's just how it works. So you need to learn the self-discipline to control that, to become aware of it and how you are communicating that subconsciously and how to become okay with yourself. Because if you learn to heal, if you learn to be happy and be content, I'm telling you, it's weird. The more that you become content with how things are, the bigger the opportunities you get and the bigger award. Like it's strange. Another thing that this is positive things. Now I have a list of three positive things. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go over more things outside of this. But like, if you are consistently hardworking and everybody knows you're hardworking, like you're always on it. And I think that's more of a case of like consistency rather than like anybody can have a short burst of hardworking.
Yeah.
But if you are, and this is hard to do, but if you are someone that is reliably hardworking for like a decade or half a decade, that becomes part of your brand.
Yeah.
This guy is known to be hardworking. So rather than burst.
Sorry, can I say on that real quick? This is a really quick thing. So before we moved out here, we came out and visited. Do you remember that? Like I came to visit and check out the studio.
That was like I saw like 6 to 8 months before.
This still stands out to me. Nautic from the studio, very hard worker. It's like, but he was very quiet about it. I still vividly remember we were all talking in the studio A, and he was just quietly going through the studio and like doing. He was still doing things. And that's for some reason that still just stuck with me. I was like my instant image of him was like, oh yeah, Nautic's just a hard worker.
That does
being,
stick.
Being quietly a hard worker like pays off a lot. Cause I was like, oh yeah, he wasn't even being louder. They were very subtle things, but he was just like going throughout the studio, just doing little things and like being on top of stuff. And even though I was just a visitor and I didn't even know who he was, it like stood out Nautic as a hard worker.
Oh, I wonder if this is like a personal flaw versus something else, but
yeah.
Also my favorite interns are someone that never needed to be acknowledged. For example, there's another guy named David who's like one of our best interns. We've talked about him.
Yeah,
nobody acknowledges him. No other interns. Like David's a really hard worker. He stands out above us. David's very quiet and doesn't showboat. He just does his work and we don't have to, because there's some interns that do a good work, but in order for them to continue to do work, we have to openly acknowledge that they're working hard.
Yeah.
Because that they're in it for the acknowledgement of it.
Yeah.
But David, we never had to acknowledge it. And when it came down to it, like after like a year or so, like we rarely ever acknowledge him, and he was still putting in the consistent hard work.
Yeah, anyway, I had to acknowledge him for you guys.
Yeah. And he and because of that, we give him many opportunities, right?
Yeah.
So we want him to win. Number two is abundance mentality. If you don't know the difference between scarcity mentality and abundance mentality, I think this goes directly. I don't think it's possible to have any level of insecurity with an abundance mentality.
Yeah.
Like this, I think this is a insecurity is the cause. And then abundance mentality is a symptom scarcity mentality is a symptom of that root issue, right? But it's scarcity mentality is genuinely believing that we're all competing and that every time James gets work, it's actually taking away work from me. I don't want to see James win because every time James is winning, that means it's taking away my ability and my chances to win. Abundance mentality is understanding that there's enough work to go around, there's enough money to go around, and that James's wins should be celebrated so that when I get a win, it should be celebrated by everyone too. And this is more of like a perspective that you have on life that is very subconscious and comes from a deep level of confidence and security.
Yeah, like this is something that came to mind. It's, I don't have a statistic for it, but there's constantly someone who just made the decision, I'm going to do music full time. There's constantly someone who just bought their first interface. Like, there's always going to be new and more artists to work with. And like, it's just like a thing of, there's enough to go around. And if you, and I think a part of everyone cheering for you and rooting for you and for you wanting to go up is just being everyone's friend. And like, everyone wants to see their friend succeed. So if you kind of like treat the industry like, hey, we're all friends, we're here to work together, there's enough work for all of us and you could be happy for other people. I think that it'll bring you a lot of success, but it'll just like make your career and like your life just more enjoyable with it.
Yeah, I agree. And this is really interesting too. I literally had a friend of mine that'll stay anonymous come over a couple weeks ago. He just moved out here from a different state. And he's older than me. He's had a more, a bigger career as an artist. And the entire time he was here, and I took him to lunch, there was this deep subconscious thing that he was doing where, and I had to call him out on it afterwards. So the entire time he was kind of complaining and talking shit on people that were doing well, like his friends that he grew up with, that all of a sudden like started doing well. Sorry, the stream got cut out. Oh, that sucks. Hopefully it comes back.
Yeah.
But he was like, the entire time he was complaining about it. And he was doing this subconsciously. Like, he was like, hey, I'm sorry for being negative here. And he was almost sometimes like even like qualifying the things that he was saying.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, and he was like, dude, you're doing so well. And he was like brown nosing a little bit, even though he was talking about how other people do brown nose. He was complaining about brown nosers and he was like subconsciously brown nosing. And it was funny, like, at the end of it, I had to sit down and tell him, hey, I'm going to pause right here. And like, this is right before he left, like 10 minutes before he left. It's like, hey, nobody else in the industry is going to tell you this. And this is really uncomfortable for me to tell you this. And I want you to know, I hope we stay friends even after I tell you this. But right today, the entire day today, you've been really negative and really like unpleasing to talk. It's not pleasurable to talk to you. And I was straight up. It's like, if you want to do well, like, you're keeping yourself out right now. And I want you to win. And I've been a fan of you always.
Yeah.
And this is a sad thing. The entire time, without ever saying it, you've been talking to me as if you have already acknowledged that you are a has-been that lost your chance. And you're trying to prove yourself and talking and giving excuses as to why you should have been the one that made it and not your friends. Yeah. And this is how you're talking to me. You haven't told me that directly, but that's what I'm getting. Why are you doing that? And I had to call him out on it. And that's like almost verbatim what I said. Granted, I probably said more words. And I went on and I was like, and he started getting a little bit defensive about it. And I was like, hey dude, like, I want you to come back over. I still want to be friends, but this right now, what you're doing isn't going to fly. And I think it was really uncomfortable for me, but for him, I think that hopefully that turns into a really big lesson that I guarantee I'm probably one of the only people in his entire life that gave it to him straight like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is not pleasing. This is very unpleasing to talk to you. This was not fun. Stop doing that. Life, that's the problem with life, is nobody will ever tell you because it's super uncomfortable to tell you that stuff. Which goes to the last point of how to become liked and how to become someone that everybody wants to see win is by being truly, genuinely, sincerely authentic.
Yeah. A good hang.
Being a good hang.
Like, that's just it. Like, people, like at NAMM or just reaching out on Instagram to like bigger engineers, like pretty much all of them are very chill. I have yet to, even though I have heard some stories about some of, like, very few of the big engineers, but like pretty much all of them, they're just like very cool. Like, you could walk up to them at NAMM and like start talking to them, and it's not like some weird you're getting brushed off. Like, most of the time they're just like very cool guys to hang around, very easy to talk to, which is like very essential for what we do. You want an artist to feel comfortable communicating to you if they don't, you know, if there's something they want you to change with their mix. If you're a good hang, then, and they feel comfortable, they feel more comfortable giving you notes.
And I think this is another subconscious thing as well. Like, people that are naturally insecure. This happened, do I want to give this a specific example? There's a specific example that stands out recently. Do I want to share this? Let me think about this. Let me self-filter here for a second. Yeah, I think I will, but I'll keep it anonymous. This is a small, specific example of how this can come out, being inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how subconscious and how subtle it is, but how big of an impact it can make to people listening. Okay, in my church, we had new leadership called. New leader, new president of a quorum kind of deal. And we had other people, and there's a bunch of visitors because it's a big there's a big conference in our area. One dude was like, "Hey, yeah, why did you join the church? Why did you become a Christian?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I was, you know, I married a Christian girl." And that was part of it. Yeah, for sure. And like, there was like two or three other people that are converts as well. And like, "Why did you do it?" And like, "Yeah, like, I married a Christian girl, but also because I really believed in it." Like, they become really defensive in that moment.
Mm.
Like, subconsciously, like, the person, the leader, the new president that was talking was like, "Yeah, no, that's part of it for sure." And like, he didn't become defensive over it. It was just like a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other two dudes in the audience who was asked to talk about it, they're like, "But it's also, I like really believed in it."
Mm.
And it's like, it was the subconscious defensive nature that like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad example, but like in that moment, it felt like, "Oh, these guys are just trying to prove something." And in Christianity, it's very obvious because in a matter of faith, it's the worst type of faith is people just trying to prove it.
Yeah.
Like faith that needs to be acknowledged isn't faith at all.
Mm-hmm.
Main lesson from the movie Silence, 2016, by the way.
It's a good movie.
Okay, I'm going to say that again. Faith that needs to be acknowledged isn't faith at all. And and it's very insecure and it's very defensive. Even
I'm not making the connection.
Okay, talk about
further
things.
Further explain to me, yeah.
becoming defensive is a subconscious mechanism that we create that comes from a deep place of insecurity.
Oh.
The reason why I subconsciously loved the new president and I thought he was the best person ever, I wanted to see him win, was because he stood out to obviously be so authentic. I wanted to be his friend.
Yeah.
I'm like, "Dang, I want to be this guy's friend," because at no point was he trying to defend his faith or cared for people to acknowledge the strength of his faith. He was just like being super real. And I think, goes on a tangent and is unrelated, but I mean, the point is, I think those moments of insecurity and the reason why I speak so highly of trying to figure that shit out is because that comes out, and becoming defensive is a mechanism that comes from insecurity that you can't control, and to everyone else is fucking obvious. Like I asked you the other day, like, "Oh," and I became defensive about a topic that we were talking about that is completely unrelated to any of these things.
Yeah.
I asked you, like, I wanted to check on myself, like, "Did I become defensive?" And you're like, "You did." And I was like, "Okay, that's a self-check. Like, I need to figure that out."
Yeah.
Like, because I can't tell.
Yeah, usually if you get defensive about something, it is just like you have something to sort out with it.
Yeah.
So, I see the connection.
So authentic. Yeah, sorry. This is a long
I was like,
circle.
I was like, I'm trying to see this connection, but it's starting to come together.
So the last thing, if you want people to see you win, want people to root for you, I think that comes from high levels of authenticity. And now I'm like talking too much and I'm feeling insecure about it. But I think authenticity is the last and final puzzle of figuring shit out in order for people to want you to win. Going back to the Shane Gillis like commentary, Shane Gillis has never been anything other than authentic. He's never tried to prove himself. He's never had to double down because of pride. He's never like, he's insecure in a way, like he's humble. It comes off as humble.
Yeah.
Right. Versus arrogant and or insecure. And I think that's part of the puzzle pieces that kind of come together to make someone that people want to cheer for. I'm trying to think of other people that like in our industry, like who is someone in our industry that we always want to see win? Like, I think like everybody wants to see Leslie win.
Artist-wise,
independent
a lot during
artists.
This, Phineas O'Connell, like Billie Eilish's brother. Have you ever watched him in an interview?
No, I haven't.
He like has all the things in this list. He's very well spoken. Like if anyone's listening, like watch one of his interviews and watch how he responds to compliments. I don't know how to put it, but it's very like, he's just very like, "Oh, thank you." Like it's not like an apologetic or like, you know how like the almost want to like when someone gives you a compliment, be like, "Ah, no, I'm garbage" or whatever. Like he's very well spoken and he's like not a bitter person. He's very likable. He's not putting anyone down. And when he's very confident in what he does still, like he's not apologetic about his work or what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an example I could think of. Like just watch any of his interviews. He's a very well-spoken guy, but like, I feel like a lot of people are really rooting for him because of that.
I have to ask you a question. Do you think charisma can be learned? Is charisma a skill?
I think it could be learned, or I think it could be.
Because there are obviously people who are naturally charismatic and easy to become friends with, easy to become likable.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about the person who really believes themselves to be uncharismatic, unlikable. Do you think it's a skill that can be learned to become likable?
I think it can, especially just being nice. I guess, how do I put this? I have like some of the engineers that are fairly successful that I met. So there are some of them who are very socially awkward, but they're still very likable. That makes sense?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's
like they're really very nice. Or like, I don't know how to put it. But yeah, so I guess I don't know if that answers your question or not, but I think.
Yeah, it doesn't mean outgoing is unrelated to being likable.
Because there's like charisma where like you're like the life of the party, you know, everyone's walking over, high, hey, what's up and stuff.
Very but high in extroversion.
I do feel like there's just like, there's something said too about just being a quiet, but like likable person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I do feel there's a lot of people that immediately come to mind when you said that. Like people that are not necessarily like high in extroversion. They're not really loud, but they're likable. They're genuine people. I think that some people will have a harder time learning to become charismatic or learning to become likable.
Yeah.
But from personal experience, as well as seeing it from others as an observer, and this is kind of out of my depth here. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a professional that is aware of other professionals. That's all I am as an observer. I do feel like the people that are, I do think that charisma in that level, being likable, can be something that it learned. But I think it starts with this really almost spiritual level of accepting self.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way to put it.
I think people that like themselves, that accepted themselves, it is very, very obvious in their language and demeanor.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like it's not in like remembering people's names or like How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. There's genuine, are you happy? Yeah. People want to be around happy people. And I think happiness is learned and it's accepted rather than it is given.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. Very like, yeah, like I remember I did a 2-year mission for my church. And like, that's when I think I became better at being social and stuff. And a lot of that did come from me just learning myself and understanding. And that kind of translated into how I interacted with people. Yeah, there's like ways to learn to like be like those people. So like even if like some of the people that came to mind when I talked about the kind of awkward engineers, some of them can't even carry a conversation that well. But like I was still left that interaction like, okay, they were cool. I liked them. And I think it did came from like they at least like showed that they cared.
Oh, going back to Shane Gillis, I think there's a reason why my 3-year-old son, the Down syndrome guy, right?
Oh, he has Down syndrome?
Yeah, no, you're right. There's a reason why Shane Gillis's joke lands so hard. I think it's so interesting. Like, Down syndrome kids are typically not well-spoken. It's very rare, right? I mean, obviously, there's different varied degrees of severity.
Yeah.
But yet, consistently across the board, Down syndrome people are liked by everyone. And they are a joy in everyone's life. And they are the least aware of what's going on. Like, probably less likely to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good cap of, like, you don't need to be incredibly intelligent. You don't have to be very well-spoken. I think to be liked and to be someone that everybody wants to see win, to become authentic, to become, to get to a point where you do well in your career just comes down to, are you happy? Are you happy? Do you allow others to be happy? Do you increase the happiness in this world? Are you miserable, and are you making other people miserable too? Because Kyo, my son, is everybody, he waves to strangers all day. Like,
yeah, he's a very happy kid.
He's waving to everyone and smiling at everyone, and he is a joy. And he's doing this at 3. Why am I not waving to the crossing guard or to other parents at the school when I drop him off? You know, when did I become so cynical?
Yeah.
How, and it makes me think about this. It's such a pleasure to be around him. And he's only fucking 3, you know? He can't even say words. He still shits his pants. You know, he's wearing diapers. And it is such a pleasure to be around him.
Yeah.
And I'm just...
That's true.
I think that there's a bigger, deeper lesson that I'm not able to properly articulate, but I think that this... I think we'll wrap up the episode like this. Like,
yeah. I have some final thoughts, too.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear your final thoughts.
Oh, it's just... how do I put it? We said this at the beginning, but I don't want it to sound like we're trying to put people down who do struggle with, you know, keeping these things or like we said, being professional, but it is something to know. Like, it's very something that you could very much learn. Like I brought up in the beginning, like, it's so overwhelming learning how to be good with finance. Like, it's like one of those things where, like, yeah, it's straightforward and like it's very easy to understand, but putting it in practice is still a hard practice. But over time, like putting in effort, you could get good at it. I don't know. I just kind of want to like say like it's very doable. I'm like right now in my career, I wouldn't say I'm not in any crazy position yet. I've only been out here for 7 months, but like it is like a kind of inspiring thing that I'm like now getting more consistent work and I'm seeing things and it's slowly becoming more and more reality. And I'm starting to see, oh, I can make a living from this. I could provide for a family from this. And it's very overwhelming sometimes when you're first starting out to think of like how that could be possible, but it is. It's something that slowly becomes a reality, and it could be discouraging sometimes, and it is scary to think of to be in an unconventional career that doesn't have like a 401k or work benefits or things like that. But I think it is something that is very possible, and there's a lot of work to go around for everyone. There's always going to be more artists, and there's always going to be more stuff for us to do. And so, yeah, I think it's hard to start keeping these habits, to keep a calendar. It's easy to just forget to do those things, but it is something that will make a really big difference.
Yeah.
That's just kind of it. That's kind of like my final thoughts. It's very doable. Like, just know that even if you're not doing that now, and it's never too late to change and to start, do whatever it takes to like help with however your mind works to keep these habits, because it is something that does pay off.
Yeah, no baby is born, or there's no high school that requires you to learn how to use Google calendars.
Yeah.
That is a choice that somebody makes at a point in their lives.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, I think for me too, like, I think I've become even more reliable and a better, more professional person, like, in the last couple of years.
Yeah, you said on the exclusive, like, your biggest change is that you, even though you were already reliable before, you became more professional.
I am impenetrably reliable.
He's so impenetrable, it's crazy.
Like, my defense, yeah, that's a weird way to describe it, but you know what I mean. Like, my defenses are impenetrable. Okay. The last thing I do want to acknowledge is the one thing that is difficult with our career is that as creatives, we have to delusionally keep going down this path with no end in sight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, when you work a regular 9-to-5 career, you kind of see where you can get promoted to, kind of how everybody else is doing. You can gauge yourself. There's like measurable, key progress, KPIs, key progress indicators, right?
Guaranteed income,
you know, but with a creative career, the hardest thing is learning to deal with, you have no idea if you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And part of the empowerment of the podcast is I hope that these are small landmarks that you can look at. Because at the end of the day, this is something I talk about. Part of the reason why I run, part of the reason why I'm so tough on myself about this sort of stuff is because if I'm not doing these things, I get lost in the sauce and have no idea if I'm doing the right thing. But if I'm running and exercising, if I'm keeping a calendar, if I have a to-do list, if I'm using Trello, then I know for a fact it's just the difference between me, DK now, and more successful DK in the future is just a matter of time.
Yeah.
But if you aren't doing any of these things, you kind of get lost in the gray zone of, am I doing the right thing? You have no idea.
Yeah.
And it becomes less of a guess and more of a surety when you make the decision to take back control of your life.
Yeah.
And no matter what difficulties you have that are valid, invalid, whatever, these are choices that everybody has made. And I will acknowledge that this is part of life that is difficult for everyone. Getting to the point where you have to pay taxes and you could just very easily just not and have to deal with it next year.
It's so stressful. I wish I didn't have to, but
yeah. But this is a choice that this is the hard part of life. And I will acknowledge that. But yeah. This is the hard part that everyone has to get over. Everyone that you know that is successful this was a conscious decision that was made. It wasn't like someone does it for them. No, they consciously decided, I'm going to start using a to-do list. I'm going to set up systems. I'm going to reply to this email, even though I may feel some social anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to intrinsically ghost this, like, I want to ghost this person. I don't want to talk about money up front because it's very difficult to.
Yeah.
These are choices that everyone has made, especially the ones that are doing the best.
Yeah.
So I want to empower you by telling you that these are choices that you can also make. And I hope that you do. And I hope that this podcast becomes a resource to you. And I give you permission. You give yourself permission to make the choices that you know are right.
Yeah.
Thank you, James. This is a really great episode.
Yeah, this was fun.
I honestly think these are the type of episodes that nobody wants to hear, but these are the episodes where careers are made.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the ones that make a difference.
Yeah, like I don't mean to just talk about how great our podcast episode was, you know, but I mean, like, I think that if you've made it this far into the episode, then I do think that you are the type of person that has the capability to do well.
Yeah.
So please, please continue to be curious, continue to learn, continue to self-improve. Yeah. And
You got it.
All power to you.
It's possible. That's just all I can say.
It's possible.
I'm realizing more and more. It's just like it's one of those things that just becomes more and more of like an actual, oh yeah, this is a career. That's like the only way I know how to put it. It's just like, I'm in that phase right now. I'm like, okay, this is like starting to become something that I could solely just live off of mixing and like stuff like that. So yeah, it's doable.
So yeah, on that note, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Go to mixedmusicpodcast.com, subscribe to the exclusive episodes where James and I have more conversations about technical stuff. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.